on the House Bill 2004. This is the Subcommittee on General Government of the Ways and Means, Joint Ways and Means. Karen Seegers is our committee assistant with Dallas Wyand from Legislative Fiscal Office. And today, as we go into the public hearing on House Bill 2004, we'll invite Dallas Wyand from Legislative Fiscal to go ahead and give us the information, and then we'll invite the agency to come forward. Dallas?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, briefly, House Bill 2004 instructs the Public Employees Retirement Board to adopt new mortality tables, which are converted into what's known as actuarial equivalency factor tables, so that mathematically they can compute the retirement benefits. The bill has passed the House, of course, and Senate General Government comes to us being engrossed. It has come down here to Ways and Means for a couple of reasons. One, to lock in what the adjustment to the employer rates would be as a result of this. And also to provide additional limitation to the public employee to implement provisions of the bill. When we get into work session, we have amendments before you that have been approved, that reviewed and approved by both Representative Krupp and his members and the chair. And I believe Senator Corcoran is in agreement with them. So when we get to work session, we can review the amendments.
Representative Knope and his committee then has reviewed those.
Yes.
Okay. Steve, you're going to act on behalf of the PERS? Steve and Dave? Steve and Dave, sure.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm David Bailey, First Deputy Director. Okay. And with me is Steve Delaney, our legislative coordinator, and we have some items that we'd like to enter into the record.
Has there been a coup over at PERS? Where's Mr. Voitko today?
Mr. Voitko is at an investment seminar.
I hope he's making us a lot of money this morning. Okay, I hope he's making us a lot of money this morning in that investment seminar. Steve, are you going to lead off?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Steve Delaney, PERS legislative liaison. There are two items that we simply want to put on the record regarding the bill so that it is part of the legislative history. The first one is both memos are entitled 2004B. The first memo I'm referring to is the one that begins page 2, lines 35 to 37. This was produced at the request of Department of Justice. They asked that we put on the record, with regard to page 2, lines 35 to 37, where it discusses the mortality assumptions adopted by the board on September 10, 2002. Department of Justice was concerned that for enforceability, it would be difficult for someone to understand what had actually been adopted by the board. So we have included in this memo background from the PERS actuary explaining what those assumptions are and how they are calculated to allow someone who is wanting to do further research on this issue to find that information. Okay. That's the first memo. And I can answer questions on that if there are any.
Is that the two-page memo?
That's the larger.
That's memo. The larger two-page memo.
The second memo, the much smaller one, is produced because of questions that came from our own PERS staff, who will be putting together the actual retirement calculations using the look-back provisions of this bill. On page 3, lines 2 through 6, it directs PERS to produce a frozen account balance as of June 30, 2003, that would include employee contributions made on or behalf of the member as of June 30, 2003. And three particular scenarios arose that we are simply putting on the record as to how we plan to administer this particular bill. One has to do with June 30 contributions that may not actually arrive at PERS till several weeks later. We would plan to put those into the June 30 account based on statutory definition of salary paid. The second issue has to do with clerical errors, where an employer determines at a later date that there really should have been dollars paid into that June 30 account. Present statute already allows for us to back in dollars retroactively when it's identified as a clerical error, and that's what we would plan to do. The third issue has to do with service time purchases. With regard to service time purchases, if a person, say, is retiring January 1, 2004, and they're purchasing time from 1977, we would not include the dollars they would be paying into PERS on January 1, 2004 for the purchase of that service time in the June 30, 2003 frozen account balance. We would use the service time when doing the calculation, but we would not use the dollars that would be in that account. That's what this memo is doing. It's simply explaining then how PERS anticipates administering this bill, and we wanted to put it on the record before the committee. I am available to answer questions if you have them on these.
Are there questions regarding either the issue relative to the incorporation of the mortality tables? I understand that's that you're using RP2000 mortality tables published by the Society of Actuaries on the basis of all new mortality assumptions, or the issue of the assumptions, including all employee contributions made by or on behalf of the member as of June 30, including payments made subsequently, as well as the second issue, reporting errors, and finally the service time differences. Are there questions relative to those? Senator Devlin is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a question actually about the portion that you talked about directly, but I have a question about the mechanics of a portion of this, and that is that you're also crediting the earnings. And on the regular accounts, that should be pretty easy because of the 8%, 4% for half of a year. But on the variable accounts, are you going to be able to get numbers from the treasurer to be able to do that effective that day?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, yes. We currently have that process in place for individuals who retire mid-year.
Okay.
And we do have rules in place that we use to determine what the variable rate for those individuals mid-year, and we'd be using those same rules in this scenario.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Patrick is recognized.
I just want to make sure that I'm understanding correctly the larger memo on the RP2000 table number. Is this what we're saying now is that we're reducing the life expectancy of the people from the current mortality tables that are being used by a year and a half, for example, in the state and local group for males?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, actually it's indicating that life expectancy actually is extending, that,
right.
that individuals are living longer. This, and I apologize, I'm not an actuary, so I can't speak to the details of this information, but this was the information that was used by the actuary in presenting to the PERS board what would be involved in changing the assumptions, recognizing the longer life expectancies of individuals today. What you'll notice with regard to the year and a half that you're pointing out, the actuary takes the RP2000 mortality table study, which is nationwide,
right,
and then adjusts it based on actual experience within the state of Oregon.
Right.
So there, the 1.5 years that we use simply as an example is to show how a change is made to those tables to identify mortality assumptions within the state of Oregon.
But the minus is a minus year and a half out of the payout as a... I would think of it as additive as opposed to subtractive. But maybe that's how actuaries view it.
No, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think what's missing from this is the same sort of adjustments were made to the 1978 or the prior mortality tables, which had different life expectancies. So this is using the 2000 mortality tables, and then adjustments are made based on actual experience in Oregon, whereas in the prior mortality tables that were used, I believe it was the 78 or 80 tables, where the actuary would make the same sort of plus or minus adjustment to those national tables. Correct me if I'm wrong, Steve. We are really using the same tables.
So, for example, if the national data is 80 years old, and then our actual experience is the minus 1.5, so it would be 78.5. This is a minus off the national data.
That would
but our current factor may be 75, so it would move from 75 to 78.5. Just
correct.
So I have some... I'm not an actuary either, so I want to make sure for the record that I understood how to read this. Yeah, and I wouldn't admit it if I was.
Yes.
Kind of like being a CPA, I don't know if I would admit that if I was.
Drop down your head one, 2 minutes.
That's right.
Other questions for Steve relative to these two handouts that we have? Exhibits. Thank you, Steve. David?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And our intention was to go ahead and show you the rolling thunder slides of what we're actually calling emerging reality.
I think we'll do that during during work session. Let's go ahead and incorporate the more technical data now. Actually, that isn't super technical, but it follows. Let's do that in public hearing, or do you want to do that in work session? Let's go ahead and do that now. I think that's appropriate. Representative Johnson gets a kick out of this. It's our rolling thunder, our emerging reality. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We appreciate you giving us the time to do this. This is really a preview, and I'll be brief, but it's basically a preview of all the requirements that we see coming to us as a result of what we call the emerging reality. And it's based on a number of things. As you know, budgets are developed long in advance of the time when they are actually implemented. We started or finalized this budget in the first few months of 2002. We'll implement it about a year and a half later. As a result, it really doesn't address all of the things that have happened since that time or will happen with what's going on in the legislature today. And those things are a surge in retirements in 2003. We had a surge in retirements in 2002. We thought we would see things flatten out in 2003. It didn't happen. We have a little bit more detail to provide you on that. So our projections for workload in the 2003-2005 budget are not matching up with the current reality, or the emerging reality. As I said, we have pending legislation. We'll be talking about the actuarial diplomacy factor bill today. That's not anticipated in our budget. And there's a good chance we'll see a new retirement system, and we'll have to play some role in the creation of that. And there will probably be other changes to the system, I think mostly of House Bill 2003, which has a number of changes to the current system, which will require programming and other resources for us to make sure that we achieve all the requirements and the savings that are included in those bills. And the final point we wanted to make about all this is that we really need to start now.
Representative Johnson, yes. Recognizes.
I appreciate the exercise that you're going through, but one thing seems to me to be conspicuously absent as you're trying to project your new reality, and maybe you'll get to it. But it seems to me that if you're thinking about a new retirement system, changes to the other system that will come as a result of legislation, have you factored in additional litigation costs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we have not included additional litigation costs in our 2003-2005 budget or in any we haven't contemplated that in the fiscal impacts for any of the bills. So I would say that we would assess those as the suits are filed and come back to an emergency board if additional funds are needed.
President Johnson, follow up?
Well, I would defer to LFO staff's opinion as well on this. It seems to me that prudent budgeting would suggest at least some contingency held for that, or is the expectation you do it all through the emergency board? I'm just trying to get a sense of what makes the most fiscal sense to anticipate it now or in a proactive sort of way, or just wait until it arrives and deal with it.
We do have resources within the budget presently for the 0103, and there certainly are amounts that we're reserving for 0305. I don't think it anticipates the additional litigation as a result of the pending pending legislation. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had actually more of a procedural question in that, in terms of, I would assume that there will be litigation on 2004 and particularly on 2003, and I assume the state will be named defendant in that litigation. Would the Attorney General defending that case, would those costs be attributable to PERS, or would they be attributable to the executive branch? That's the question I have.
Let's see. Probably everybody's going to be named.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, if I can be so bold as to offer a little bit of perspective, both to your question and actually to go back to Representative Johnson's as well. I think you're absolutely right. You're headed down the right road. And excuse me, for the record, Cora Parker from the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management Division. I think you're headed down exactly the right road. Depending on how the suits are filed, there's probably a high likelihood that actually both PERS, the agency, the executive branch, possibly the governor, the legislative body, I mean, we're going to have a whole host of folks who are named in the suit, and depending on how we get together, how those groups get together to defend that suit, who's charged and who ultimately recovers those costs could be very different as far as, I mean, ultimately they all relate back to the system and there's probably at least a linkage to the trust fund, but I don't know that they would all necessarily be directly out of PERS budget. To take that back to Representative Johnson's initial question about prudency in accounting for some of this initially in the budget or not, I think there's a little bit of question because we don't know exactly where those dollars will ultimately be coming from, whether they're actually out of the executive branch or the department itself. But I do also want to point out, and the agency will probably, you know, you'll probably see their jaws wide open after I say this, that we did give them a slight increase this last biennium in their AG account to help them with the costs that they were experiencing this biennium for the Lipscomb case and other suits. So while that probably is not enough to get them through the type of litigation that they may experience, it is slightly above where they would have just been sitting a couple of biennia ago when they weren't experiencing the sort of litigation that they are. So I think we've helped them start towards what could be litigation costs, and ultimately I think the emergency board I believe is the appropriate venue. Obviously, your opinion is what matters in the end. But we're not talking about general funds. We're simply talking about limitation to expend the monies, the trust fund monies that are available at any given point in time. So
I think that's probably wise, particularly in relationship to the fact that I hesitate to be setting aside a war chest of money to start filing lawsuits now, plus the fact that by not setting it aside now, by coming back to the emergency board for these other fund appropriations, what it does is it establishes it as separate and distinct amounts which are utilized only for those specific issues and not just general, or not just for the Attorney General's costs generally that would be in other funds. Dallas?
Mr. Chairman, if I may add on to that, there is another professional service associated with all of this that I don't think should fall under the radar screen because it's going to come to the surface, and that is the actuarial services that are being provided as we speak in development of all of these bills and the like. And we've been discussing this with PERS, and they're going to try to track the cost as to the source of those work requests, if you will, to the actuary, and then whomever comes when they come forward to them, the determine who's going to pay, it will all be available to the emergency board for its ways and means.
That would be particularly important with regard to the successor plan, because if the successor plan was operated outside of the existing PERS and perhaps run off TIA craft or privatized or whatever, then those funds, those expenditures should be related to that successor plan, not the existing. Senator Devlin's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question may be a little bit in advance of... given the fact that 2004 and 2003 will probably both be litigated, and there's a chance that both will be thrown out by the courts, there's probably a much higher chance of 2003. Who does the liability accrue to should those be thrown out, and should there be a settlement? Do they accrue to the public employees retirement system, or do they accrue to the state?
Senator Devlin, can you help define the liability that you're speaking of specifically?
Some people believe that the courts will ultimately decide these issues because of the expedited appeal process within about a year of the end of the legislative session. Others believe that the courts may take their time, which they've been known to do. if the courts come back and reverse these decisions, there may be costs to be paid. There may be judgments to be paid in terms of actions that have been taken. Who do those judgments accrue against, the PERS system or the state? By going to the PERS system, it will go to all the employers, actually. By going to the state, it will go to the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, I think that's a question that will probably have to be answered by the courts themselves. And it depends on the shape of the legislation, who sues regarding what aspects of that legislation, who they sue, and what the courts decide. And maybe I've missed your question, but I look at it kind of like attorney fees. They can make all kinds of decisions about who's going to pay for the attorney fees after they've made their other decisions. I think the liabilities in these cases will be very difficult to sort out, and I just can't give you an answer right now.
If I could add, just to take off of what David said, you know, depending again on how the suits are filed, who they're against, who's bringing them, whether or not they actually ask for injunctions. I mean, we could, you know, I think where you're headed is if we have started to implement something, and a year or two down the road they say, you should not have implemented that, and you're talking about going back and recalculating retirements that we've already done, or those sort of processes. I think the court will have to take some action immediately to give the agency direction on whether or not they should continue to move forward or not. I'm sure that whoever's bringing suit will request those sorts of things initially.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, just to wrap up this slide, we are beginning now, and we need to begin now to implement some of the changes, particularly the House Bill 2004, if we're going to achieve the goals of that bill. And we have a few slides just to show the breakdown of what is emerging. This shows the projected workload in our current, or our 2003-05 projected budget, due to the retirements that the increase in retirement through the baby boomers in our system and their age. And this is basically what the budget is set out to provide. The actual workload is emerging something like the red line there, where we have today about 5,000 people who have asked to retire during the first 6 months of the year. We are staffed to retire about 2,000 people every 6 months. So it's about a 250% increase in our workload. Now, what happens when we see a surge in retirements, and this really has been the history of PERS, is we have peaks and valleys in the number of people that retire. And traditionally what we've done during the peak times is we dedicate our resources to the retirements and we generate backlogs in other areas. When we hit the valley, then we go after those backlogs and we catch up. Unfortunately, what's happened over the last several years is that there are no valleys. We see a surge, it might flatten out a little bit, but then we see another surge. And as a result, we've generated a number of backlogs during the last biennium. And there's a package in the current budget request to address those backlogs. Unfortunately, with the current surge in retirements, which we really did not expect, that backlog continues to grow. We were hoping that we could maintain it at its current level, but that has not been the case. So that continues to be a growing workload for us. Accuracy, we talked to you about this. The Secretary of State Audit Division, at our request, doubled the size of their audit of our benefit calculation accuracy so that we could get a statistically valid sample, and it showed that about 15% of the benefit calculations have a financial error. That continues to be an issue for us, and there's a package in the current request to address that. We don't see the current workload increase changing the percentage of our accuracy. However, the volume of transactions has gone up. So we can expect that the number of retirement calculations that have some error in them is going up. This slide talks about the actuarial equivalency factor project, if you want to call it that. This is House Bill 2004. And we'll talk more about this when we get into the actual bill. But you can see that we need to begin now, because as of July 1 of 2003, we need to establish an account for every member. And we don't normally do that in the middle of the year. So we have begun the process of hiring people using current budget surplus in order to begin this process now. And we hope that you will support the number of people we're asking for in today's request so that we can continue those people into the next biennium on this project. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. This slide is based on just our initial reaction to the governor's proposals, which are being inserted into House Bill 2003. And there's basically three things involved in that. One is the diversion of the employee 6% to a deferred compensation account. That really does not represent a significant workload for us. We don't see anything material as a result of that. It's fairly straightforward and simple. The other two parts of it, however, are much more complex, and it will probably surprise no one to learn that diverting some of the COLA and averaging the assumed rate crediting rather than doing it every year, averaging it over a person's career, will require substantial reprogramming of the RIMS system. If those elements become law, we'll be looking at that kind of a workload. You might notice we put on here a retirement spike at the end of 2004, the beginning of 2005, and that's because the proposals, of course, they haven't really been, we haven't seen a draft of them yet, but from what we've been told, the COLA would be suspended and for everyone who retires between 2003 and the end of 2004, I believe.
July 1st, 2001.
That's right. So our assumption is that there'll be a number of people that wait towards the end of that period to retire and then come at us later in that period.
That's the proposal. That's one proposal.
That's one proposal, yeah. There may be a successor plan. And again, what that successor plan will be, we don't know, so this is just a general idea of how the workload would come about. We'll have more detail on that when we see the actual details of what comes out.
I'm sorry, Senator Devlin's recognized.
In terms of the 2003, in terms of averaging the rate of return over the employee's career at 8% rather than on an annual basis, how is that going to be accomplished under your understanding of the bill with variable accounts? Same way?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, you are getting the prize so far for questions that I have not considered. And I don't know if variable. I'm told that variable would be excluded from that calculation.
Second question.
Please follow up.
This one is simplistically on the regular accounts, you would just simply average what had been credited and then extend it out in terms of the number of years before the account would accrue any new contributions. Not simplistically, you might actually take 8% for each year and then put the excess into a reserve and then the next year do the same calculation again until such time. What is your understanding of how the bill will actually work?
Successor plan, Senator?
That's the 2003.
2003, the rate.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, I believe the question is about House Bill 2003 and the governor's proposal average the assumed rate crediting over the person's career rather than doing it every year. And my understanding of that is that we would be required to true that up and average it at the end of the person's career, at the time they retire.
So you wouldn't be doing an individual calculation for each year. You might say that over the period of 25 years that they've been employed, they've earned in excess of that 8% this amount. So that if you're talking about an employee staying on, it would be so many years before they got to a point where they would be earning on the account again. In terms of, it's hard to say this actually, and if you do the calculation, you'll see what I mean.
Senator, that's speculating on what that is liable to come out of committee too.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, I'm asking the questions here because I don't know if they're being asked in committee. Because the calculation, it seems more difficult than it would appear on the surface. It sounds easy to say.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, that is normally true with PERS calculations.
Nothing simple on any PERS bill.
That's calculations. True. And with so much going on, we hesitate to look too specifically at calculations until we see some language, and we haven't even seen any written draft of the bill yet. So at that time, we would take a look and dig into those kind of questions and do some calculations and see if it makes sense and what the ramifications of those things are and make sure that the committee is aware of those issues. I think those are all good questions, and I agree that it sounds simple and it is probably more complex than we initially thought.
Mr. Chairman, if you're still in conference, I'll just pose one last question. I don't think you'll be able to... If an employee retires after that bill goes into effect, but if you do that calculation, they have had earnings in excess over their career, over the 8%, which will be the case for most employees, will you reduce the amount of their account that they already have in terms of the corpus of their account?
No, the bill doesn't provide for
negative credit. Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, we would not reduce the account. And I assume what that means is that we would show on the member statements the account that they have now plus any crediting, which probably would not occur, but any crediting. And then at the time of retirement, we would make the adjustment. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, continuing on with the emerging reality.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I put all of these on one page in case you're like me and you like to see all things on one page. I really don't have any other comment about that.
That a couple of those look like what the way my grandson sleeps underneath the covers.
That, Mr. Chair, is not a bad analogy. These are all sleeping under the covers to wake up. So here's some bullet points about what we have done and what we plan to do. We have requested from DAS, the position authority for for 11 limited duration positions to begin on May 1, and this is to address the surge in retirements. And we have savings in our current budget. We're not asking for any funds for that, for those costs. We have also created 9 limited duration positions to start work on the backlogs and the accuracy initiatives. Because we have savings in the current budget, we felt it was important to start these initiatives now and get a head start on them. These positions, if you approve our request, will be converted to limited durations in the next biennium. And finally, the actuarial equivalency factor bill. The E-Board did approve funds for us to get started in this current biennium because we knew that either the legislature or the board was going to make some change. So we have sufficient budget limitation to get started. We did At your authority, you granted about 2.1 million for us to get started. We've done quite a bit, but without a final understanding of what the bills say, we were not able to expend all those dollars. And we will be probably by the end of this biennium expending about $400,000 and returning the remainder as surplus in this budget. So just to sum up, what we need at this point, we need support for our initiatives to address the retirement surge, continuing of the limited duration positions that we've begun now to address that. We've already funded for 0103, as I mentioned. We have a backlog clearance and accuracy initiatives which are in the 0305 budget. We'd like to support those. And then, of course, pending legislation such as House Bill 2004 will be coming to you as those bills pass. Now, to the extent that we need to get started early, we're bringing those to you at this point in time. Other bills, we will probably come to you as an emergency board request after the close of the legislative session. And that concludes the...
Thank you very much, Dave. Are there questions, further questions of Dave relative to the emerging reality of the financial impact on the bill? We're going to get some. We're going to get some information from the from LFO and the co-chairs relative to specific questions as to how the mortality tables and the requests for the inclusions of the information into the mortality tables may affect the financial impacts of the bill. And so I just sent Dallas to make sure that we'll be able to, there may be some drafting questions as well on the bill. So we're just going to make sure that we've got someone in staff that can assist us with any drafting. Whether or not we need to run and get Dave Hendricks or not, we'll find out. So.
Mr. Chair, are you referring to the two letters that we
How the mortality tables that we're including relative to the two letters and how the bill actually incorporates the mortality tables, dates they become effective is going to be a question. So we'll come back to that in work session. We just want to make sure that there's not any unresolved issues as we begin to go ahead and put the money with the implementation of the bill and the timing on it. Thank you very much, Dave. Is there anyone that came today to give testimony relative to the financial nature of what we'll be doing here that hasn't spoken? Thank you very much, Dave. We appreciate it. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing portion of House Bill 2004. And just hang tough here. We're gonna go into the work session in just a moment, as quick as Dallas gets back.
We need Senator Winters, I think.
I will be voting for 2004, but I still need the co-chair here, Winters.
Right, right. We're gonna get the other co-chair. But yeah, go ahead, Robbie.
Dave, you want to come
while we're off the record? Then I'm gonna ask questions while we're off.
We'll just stand at recess. We'll just stand at recess. But we're waiting.
We're gonna have a little visual over
yep.
here.
Want to throw that up on the board, Rob?
So we've got all these effective dates. We've got January 1, 2004.
Karen?
Ready?
Let's gamble back in. We're going to go back in on House Bill 2004 for an additional public hearing, additional information. And Dave, can we have you come forward and Representative Patrick is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted, for the record, to clarify on the B engrossed version of House Bill 2004 in Section 2, Sub 1, in regards to the once every two calendar years, the Public Employee Retirement Board shall adopt actuarial equivalency table factor or equivalency factor tables for the purpose of computing payments to be made to the members and beneficiaries, etc. My concern wasn't to clarify for the record as to the legislative intent to make sure that that did not prohibit the board from adopting actuarial tables during interim times between those two-year periods, especially in light of the medical breakthroughs that we continue to have or other items which may affect actuarial tables radically, though I know that they may not change every 4 years based on our previous history as someone who will be around another 30 years, probably, at least I hope, that hopefully there's some more medical breakthroughs and other things that may radically alter the way people of my generation have life expectancy. So I just wanted to make sure that the board answered that.
David?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, for the record, I'm David Bailey with PERS. I'm not an attorney, and we haven't consulted an attorney on this, but our reading of the bill seems clear. And if you look at Section 2, it says that the tables may be adopted in conjunction with the system evaluation required by ORS 238605. And if you look at 238605, it begins, at least once every 2 years, the board shall cause a competent actuary familiar with public systems of retirement and death to prepare a report evaluating current prospective assets and liabilities of the system. So it seems clear to us that that would give the board the authority to implement new tables more frequently than 2 years. In fact, on any frequency that they deem appropriate, as long as it doesn't extend beyond every 2 years.
Thank you, David. And just so the legislative intent is clear, I believe that the board's interpretation is correct. And in consultation with legislative counsel on the phone, I believe that it is correct, and there is not a prohibition, and that's the intent of the legislature, not saying that once every 2 years does not mean it prohibits it more often than once every 2 years. But
if the current generation continues to live the wild and riotous lifestyle that they're living, and it actually slows down the mortality tables.
If we continue along the path of debauchery and
debauchery. Okay. Thank you very much, Dave. Further questions for Dave in that regard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We're going to go ahead and stand at ease while we wait for the sign-offs on the -26-27 amendments before we go into work session. So we'll stand at ease for a few more moments. open then a we'll open then a work session on House Bill 2004 as being engrossed. And Dallas, what will you be working from as you take us through this?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is this handout here, the budget narrative. It's called just at the bottom left-hand corner. It's Policy Package 112 HB. If you'll go to page 1, 2, 3, 4, there's a total there that they have requested in the sum of $5,137,913 to implement House Bill 2004B. On page 3, there's some miscellaneous printing and other costs that I think can be absorbed under existing.
Excuse me, everything package?
Okay. Of $39,050. Your staff recommendation would be to adjust downward the request of the $5,137,913 by the $39,050. I think they can look to those costs and other within existing limitations so that we would be recommending $5,098,863 and the positions that they are requesting for to implement this. If you're reading through this, they have committed to basically completely implementing all of the work, completing it by the end of the 03-05 biennium, and should not have to come back for more. If you will go to, there are two amendments, they're stapled together. There's the B-26 amendment and the B-27. First, I'll go to the B-26 amendment. Section 9 has the expenditure limitation with an amount different from what they have requested here. It's because it was a prior amount they had given us. So I would recommend changing on line 5 the amount that's printed on your B-26 amendment from $5,141,678 to the new staff recommendation of $5,098,863. So that'd be $5,098,863. That would be your staff's recommendation to change the B26 amendment.
Representative Patrick moves that we suspend the rules to allow a conceptual amendment, and that we change on line 5 of the B26 amendments, change the amount from $5,141,678 to $5,098,863. Are there any objections to suspending the rules? Hearing none, so ordered, we'll go ahead and suspend the rules to take that conceptual amendment. And Representative Patridge?
Mr. Chair, I move the B6 amendments as conceptually adopted.
B26
amendments as conceptually adopted.
Is there any objection?
House Bill 2004.
Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Representative Patridge?
You want me to explain the B27?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. The B27 amendment, just this amends a little bit the going to the Supreme Court. It narrows it and actually requires now the petition of the Supreme Court. This is so that it will shorten the time and reduce the possibility of possible injunctions and circuit court actions and carrying out the legal discussion on this. So this amendment, again, has been approved by the chairs of both the substantive committees that passed the bill out, and we would move that B27 also.
You've heard the recommendation, Representative Patridge, recommendation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, Senator Devlin, question?
This is occurring after this bill came out of committee. We could assume that similar language might be in 2003.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, exactly. From this, they will be amending those.
Okay. Senator, Representative Patridge?
Mr. Chair, I move the -B27 amendments to House Bill 2004.
You've heard the recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, no word. We now have the HB 2004B as amended. Lieutenant Patrick?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2004 as amended and conceptually amended by this committee to the full committee with a due pass recommendation and incorporating fully all the public testimony that was heard for the legislative record as to the work session as well.
You've heard the recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. We will go ahead then and close the work session on House Bill 2004. as an order at Sea and Growth and Carriers.
We just needed one for the Kirk. Full.
Okay, all right.
For full.
For full?
Yeah.
For Jim Patridge?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
And this is a Senate bill, and Senators Corcoran and Minnis have requested to co-carry it on the floor of the Senate. So we have carriers on the Senate.
And Representative Kano.
We'll carry it on the House, I'm sure.
Okay, with that, we will then close this meeting of the General Government Ways and Means. Thank you very much. And we'll adjourn until even time on Monday morning.
Monday, yes.
Monday morning, what does it look like, Alice?
Monday morning, public hearing on the session. Also, Tuesday morning, you'll have another PERS bill, Senate Bill 258, which is part of the co-chair's plan, and that provides for the people who are fit. It's the burial as well. So that would be the
That's the bill allowing people to take out 1.5 times.
Yes,
so it's a lump sum.
Because it's not going to be.